Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
It was a big week in the fight against COVID. The U.S. is now averaging 2 million doses per day. Mass vaccination sites are opening across the country, and the single-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine is getting into more and more arms. Here in Illinois, with the help of the federal government, a mass vax site is getting ready to open at the United Center next week. Meanwhile, earlier this week, Chicago saw its lowest seven-day test positivity rate since the pandemic began. Joining us now to discuss those stories and the latest on COVID-19 in our region is Dr. Mia Taramina, infectious disease specialist with the DuPage Medical Group. Hi, Dr. Taramina.
Hey, Tasha.
Dr. Taramina answers your questions about COVID-19 every Friday here on Reset. Doctor, it's been about a month since all regions of Illinois moved to phase four, and I'm wondering how the state's doing now in terms of COVID-19 metrics and whether we're seeing a downward trend.
You know, so far so good. Before we have to backpedal, we first look for any sort of lack of progression. So we've seen these downward trends. We've sustained a statewide positivity rate under 3% for several weeks now, and that's very encouraging. But we have to be mindful of plateaus and be mindful of any upticks that we need to keep an eye on. So far, so good. I still think that we are a little bit too soon to be opening doors wide open and full capacity everywhere all the time and taking masks off. I think we're not near where we should be making those recommendations. But cautiously, as more people are becoming vaccinated, as restaurants are opening, patronizing some of these restaurants, especially if you're otherwise healthy and or vaccinated, and certainly being compliant with mask wearing and social distancing when you're not actively eating and drinking is becoming more and more reasonable with each passing week here.
One in six Illinoisans have received their first dose of the vaccine, at least. The governor says the state expects to receive 100,000 doses per day by mid-March. How do you feel about that progress?
We are waiting with bated breath. If that's truly what is happening, and it has been secured and confirmed by, federally, that we are going to be getting 100,000 doses a day starting mid-March, we're waiting for this waterfall. The infrastructure is in place. DuPage County, where I work most of my time, has unfortunately been a really sort of a barren desert of getting a robust number of first doses of vaccine. Other areas have received more, and I'm very excited about these mass vaccination sites. But to the extent that if hundreds of thousands of doses are going to become available, if we can get tens of thousands of doses in DuPage County, I'm very optimistic that, you know, these suburban areas are going to ramp up very, very quickly. And the intensity with which people have to search for vaccines is going to be a lot easier as the weeks go on here. I cannot wait. I wish it would be tomorrow that we would get these doses.
Yeah, well, let's talk a bit more. The United Center mass vaccination site, how significant is that?
These are the game changers. These are what's going to get people vaccinated very quickly, and a significant number of people vaccinated all over the state and all over the country with similar mass-scaled vaccine sites. Currently, the United Center is going to be doing the Pfizer vaccine. Mm-hmm. The center that was set up in Des Plaines is doing the J&J vaccine. I think the J&J vaccine is going to be used more frequently as time goes on in these mass sites, so that it's a single appointment only. And the faster we can get vaccines in arms, going from 1 million to 2 million doses in a day nationwide, I think there's stretch and room to get closer to even 3 million doses a day pending supplies and these partnerships that Johnson & Johnson and Merck have announced this week. We're going to see a lot of good things coming in the coming weeks if we can just hold on a little bit longer here.
Yeah. The United Center mass vaccination site will provide 6,000 doses a day in addition to the doses that the city and state are already receiving. Switching gears here to talk about the restaurant industry, Dr. Taramina, bars and restaurants here can now increase their capacity to 50% or 50 people. What do you think about that?
I think, again, for folks that are otherwise healthy and potentially fully vaccinated, patronizing some of these struggling businesses and restaurants is going to be high on everyone's list, as well as, you know, COVID fatigue, just people wanting to get out more cautiously if you are not otherwise ill or immunocompromised, potentially if you're fully vaccinated, and wearing your mask responsibly when not eating or drinking. I think that indoor dining is becoming something that we can slowly start to do again. I personally think, and we can't necessarily turn back the clock on this one, we really missed the boat, not only in Illinois, but nationwide, on not prioritizing restaurant workers for vaccine. I will be far more encouraged when we get into Category 1C, which, if these vaccines are coming with the allotments that are promised to us, potentially by April, we should get our vaccines into our restaurant workers. And then I think that we're going to see a changing of the tides in terms of capacities in restaurants and all of those feeling more safe when patronizing these facilities.
Well, mask mandates have been lifted in several states. I, for one, doctor, was shocked at the lifting, especially in Texas. What's your reaction to those changes?
You know, I never want to make this pandemic political, but there certainly is a political component here. There is a lot of angst in our country about getting these struggling businesses and the struggling economy back on its feet. And that is accomplished superficially by opening everything back up. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, it's too soon. I think we're not there yet. We need to drive herd immunity a little further down the road. We're so close. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, and we are going to get more vaccines in arms. We are going to, you know, meet and exceed that 100 million doses in the first 100 days of this new administration. And I think if we can get to the point where we have every adult having access to the vaccine, which is promised by the end of May, to have access, we still have to get them in arms. You know, we could be looking at a very favorable summer experience across the country. So these states jumping the gun on that could potentially single-handedly create big problems for the rest of our country and shoot themselves in the foot with what they're trying to do. I hope not. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that we are able to get this vaccine in fast enough to beat out the pace of spreading variants and to be able to safely reopen, you know, as quickly as possible.
You're listening to Reset, and we are talking with Dr. Tara Mina, infectious disease specialist from the DuPage Medical Group. And we're talking about the latest COVID-19 updates in our region. Now, she is also here to answer your COVID-19 questions, like she does every Friday. Doctor, let's jump to the phones. We've got Diane waiting in Northbrook. Hi, Diane. What's your question?
I want to know whether or not it would be safe to have another vaccinated couple in my home. My husband and I are also vaccinated, so there would be four of us. If this other couple eats indoors in restaurants.
That's a very good question, Diane. So as time is going on, we are seeing more and more evidence, slowly but surely, that fully vaccinated people, which means you've had both doses of a messenger RNA vaccine or a single dose of Johnson & Johnson plus 2 weeks, if you're fully vaccinated and those you're interacting with are fully vaccinated, the risk of spreading virus is going to be exceptionally low. Now, if these folks are frequenting restaurants and or traveling and exposing themselves to large crowds, there is a very, very small chance, but a chance, that there could be some variant that they could have been exposed to and carried. Again, I think that the risk is relatively low, especially if you all are otherwise healthy. And sooner or later, we're going to be getting to the point where congregating in groups of vaccinated individuals is going to be safer. So I think that the risk is low. Use your discretion, and hopefully we can start enjoying some time with our extended friends and family soon.
Thanks for calling, Diane. Let's hear now from Daryl in Aurora. Hey, Daryl, what's your question for the doctor?
Hi. I was just wondering if you could speak to some of the dangers of, you know, people that are trying to entrust, like, alternative medicines to treat or prevent COVID. Just for, you know, brief instance, like, my stepdad drinks, like, a citric acid saltwater mix that he believes will, you know, defeat any virus that enters your body, and so the vaccine's unnecessary and things like that.
That's a great commentary. We do know that there are some pretty interesting studies out there regarding certain supplements, vitamin C, vitamin D, using iron, using other things that are available over the counter to try to dampen the inflammatory effects and the pro-inflammatory effects of this virus. So there is data to suggest some of this stuff can be absolutely beneficial, both prophylactically to prevent COVID, and if you have a mild case of COVID, to try and keep your immune system tuned up so you don't develop a severe course. That being said, none of this should be a substitute to the available treatments if someone is ill and requires intervention, or a substitute to vaccination. That is where the evidence lies. That is where we are going to succeed with this virus. And it would be a misstep to regard anything other than what we have available for emergency use authorization and what is backed by science to truly be strategies for the management of this virus moving forward.
Doctor, let's talk about the vaccine a bit more. The CDC says the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is okay for people who have had allergic reactions to Pfizer and Moderna's. Can you tell us more about that?
So very severe adverse reactions are really rare. We believe that to the messenger RNA vaccine, those who have a severe adverse response are likely reacting to a component in the vaccine called polyethylene glycol, or PEG. Most people who have PEG allergies are well aware of them, and Johnson & Johnson would be a great vaccine for those individuals. For others who don't have any history of allergic reactions to vaccine, but may have had a very severe adverse response to the first messenger RNA vaccine, be it Pfizer or Moderna. First and foremost, I would strongly consider evaluation by allergy and immunology to weigh in as well. But for these individuals where it ultimately is deemed too risky to give that second dose of vaccine, it is in these extenuating circumstances okay 28 days later to give a single dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. 2 weeks later, this patient will be regarded as fully vaccinated. But again, it's not because of the prime boost that typically happens with two mRNA doses, it's because the single dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine is sufficient in rendering immunity. So it is a tool that we will anticipate using for the very few individuals that have severe adverse reactions to the first dose.
A study came out on Sunday that identified 7 COVID-19 variants spotted across the country with the same mutation. Should we be concerned?
You know, this is why we look and sample different variants and different strains of this virus and try and map out exactly what is happening. When we identify a weak point, we identify something that we're seeing over and over again in viruses that are in states far, far apart and in individuals that have no relationship with one another or travel or anything else, it kind of is exposing points on this 30,000 base pair genome that makes up our COVID virus. Where the weakness lies is where these mutations keep tending to show themselves over and over again. Mm. My greater concern is the fact that we are seeing areas in this country with a 1-2% incidence of the variant strains going to 10-20%, and the doubling time is looking like about 7-10 days. So another 10 days from now, we could see pockets in this country where, especially the UK variant, maybe 40-50% of all of the tests that are coming through. This is where things are worrisome. Mm-hmm. So I'm more concerned about the trends toward these viruses becoming the dominant strains in the community, which will happen. Yeah. And that's why we need to outpace it with our vaccine.
Michael in Lake County has a question about reactions to the second dose. Hi, Michael. Go ahead with your question.
2 years old, my second dose, and I had some pretty bad side effects, and my parents are getting their second dose today, and I'm just wondering what to expect when they come home.
Sure. You know, every single patient is different. There's no rhyme or reason in many cases where individuals that are otherwise healthy may have a more severe set of side effects and other individuals that you would think, oh, they've had COVID before or they have these other complicating issues. They're going to be hit pretty hard with this. And they've tended towards having a very benign course. For the most part, even the most uncomfortable side effects, which could be a high fever, chills, body aches that could last for several hours or perhaps a day. day or so, generally what happens is they are over fairly quickly too. It is okay to take medications if needed, if you if your parents are incredibly uncomfortable and would need some Tylenol and ibuprofen, but no need to take those medications until and unless some secondary vaccine side effects occur. For the most part, they should be fully recovered from these side effects in a day or two, and hopefully all will go well for them.
Thanks, Michael. That's Dr. Mia Taramina, infectious disease specialist from the DuPage Medical Group. Let's jump to another caller.
Hi, this is Barbara Benton. I'm actually a physician in Naperville, and I have a couple questions. The one that I thought was most important was I've had a couple patients come in that have been told by their local pharmacies that they need a physician prescription to get a vaccination, like at a Meijer or something like that. I hadn't heard of that. I was just wondering, is that what the pharmacies are being told?
So, Barbara, the commercial pharmacies out in the suburbs and, you know, in the collar counties especially, what they're looking for is documentation pertaining to individuals that have health criteria to meet for vaccination that are between the ages of 16 and 64. So essentially that expanded 1B class. They may have underlying heart disease, or they may have, you know, something that is not necessarily seen, like pregnancy or in some cases obesity and things like that. So if you have a patient that qualifies under the expanded 1B, it doesn't need to be a prescription, but providing on letterhead some documentation of underlying health conditions that warrant a dose when they are between the ages of 16 and 64, that is usually what the pharmacies are seeking. Otherwise, if you are category 1A or a healthcare provider and can provide a badge or pay stub or other documentation, or if you're over 65 on your ID, that should suffice as well.
Barbara, you had another question?
These were people that were in their late 70s, so that's why I was kind of curious. My other question was I guess the education, I just haven't seen the education. People don't know even how to get it. I have people that are coming into my office saying, well, I just thought somebody would call me, like my doctor's office would call me. So they're still not really getting the message yet. In fact, I applied, I work in DuPage County, but I live in Will County, never even got a call back or an email back from DuPage, but yet, you know, was able to get vaccinated in Will County. So I just think we're still needing to do a lot more work to get the word out. I mean, I'm preaching it here, but
yeah, that's good to hear. It's disheartening to hear that, you know, folks aren't hearing about it. Dr. Taramina?
It's been challenging for sure. And again, I live in DuPage County. I work in DuPage County. DuPage County has felt like an island at many times with the lack of regular supplies of vaccines. Individuals feel very frustrated with the processes here. I'm optimistic in the weeks to come, there will be supplies of vaccines more easily accessible. For those who have been more savvy, a wealth of information on certain Facebook sites like Chicago Vaccine Hunters and ZocDoc and other locations have really provided some steps in the right direction. But it's frustrating because there does need to be legwork in many cases on the part of the individual and not simply being notified by their healthcare provider or by the county if they have registered or believe they've registered. And all of that lack of transparency, again, has been frustrating. I'm optimistic that vaccine will be more easily accessible in the weeks to come, where appointments will not be something that you need to set your clock in the middle of the night for in order to register. We're getting there. Hopefully we can cross this finish line together and all get vaccinated as soon as possible.
Yeah, hopefully. Let's jump to another phone call here. Kelly's waiting in Barrington Hills. Hi, Kelly. What's your question for the doctor?
Hi, thank you. I'm a registered nurse, retired with an active license, and I've been hoping to volunteer to administer vaccinations because I understand there's a shortage of medical professionals to do so. I feel like I completely exhausted every site or avenue for registering for this. Online, I contacted my doctor, other colleagues that are still actively nursing, Cook County Health Department, Illinois Department of Health. If you could give me a suggestion, I'd sure appreciate it.
You know, I wish I had some suggestions off the top of my head. I know that there may be some capacity within my own organization for individuals to assist with vaccination, especially as we get more supplies and are able to expand our sites. You know, you have to contact, you know, the General DuPage Medical Group, number 1-888-MY-DMG-DR, and get some direction as to who to speak with or contact regarding this. There's sometimes a couple of steps that need to occur in terms of, you know, liability and stuff like that. So I think that's why it's a little bit frustrating. For the most part, I think that there are a lot of sites that actually have a number of volunteers ready to go. We just need the vaccine. So if I hear of anything else, hopefully we can get that information to you. But try to reach out to my organization, because I think we might be able to point you in the right direction as well.
Can you give that number once again, slowly?
Sure. 1-888-MY-DMG-DR.
Thank you. Let's hear now from Ebony in Wicker Park.
Yeah, my question is that both my mother and an in-home child care provider are immunized, but myself and my three-year-old daughter are not immunized. What is the risk of them now coming into our house to take care of us, and what kind of precautions do we need to still have with part of the household immunized and the other part of the household not?
Sure, and this is happening in many, many different types of configurations where maybe two members of a household are essential workers and two are not, or maybe, you know, we have two vulnerable medically vulnerable individuals that have already been vaccinated and the rest of the household has not. For those who have been vaccinated and are 2 weeks after vaccine, the chances of them getting COVID are very, very low, and the chances of them getting severe COVID are almost none. So that's what we know about the efficacy of these vaccines. So the greater risk is going to be the possibility of them unwittingly having a tiny amount of detectable virus or one of these variants and exposing you. So I would still recommend mask wearing on all parts, especially when you have mixed company where some individuals are vaccinated and some individuals are not, until and unless all the adults can get vaccinated. And the hope is that we will be able to have enough herd immunity in our communities to protect our kids until they're able to get vaccinated, which could be well into the fall for our older kids and potentially towards the end of the year and into 2022. Too, for our littlest kids. So I think that when you have mixed company, a mask wearing and social distancing is still going to be the recommendation.
Let's jump to another caller. Will is on from Hyde Park. Hi, Will. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing? Well, I am vaccinated. I'm over 65. My wife is a teacher, and she'll receive her second vaccination on Tuesday. But we have young kids. Well, not that young, age 21, age 17, and age 11. And I'm just wondering, how soon can we be one big, happy, vaccinated family, do you think?
It's going to be a
good
minute,
question,
especially
Will.
if you want to get Mr. 11-year-old or Miss 11-year-old vaccinated as well. For 21 and 17, we obviously do have vaccines that are indicated in that age group, but it's going to be to the point where we get to the general population if they are otherwise healthy. So beyond 1C into that phase 2, which I anticipate should be, we will have enough vaccine for those two folks by the end of May per the government's statements that they've made this week. The matter becomes, when can we get the vaccines in their arms? And I think that by the summer, there's a very good chance that older teens are going to be able to be vaccinated. I anticipate 12 to 16 year old results will be out in the coming months, and we may be able to get 12 to 16 year olds vaccinated. My goal, I would love to see it before fall of 2021, so we can get everyone back in school as safely as possible. And the littlest kids, ages 6 months and up, are just entering vaccine trials now. So it's going to be a while longer before we get indications to vaccinate the littlest ones. So if your 11-year-old is going to be 12 soon, we might be able to look towards an entire fully vaccinated family by fall of 2021. And that's just with the information I have at this moment. Of course, that can change.
Yeah, and with a 12 and 14-year-old at home, I was writing all of that down too, Doctor.
Very good.
But speaking of kids, I want to talk about schools for a moment, because Chicago Public Schools welcomed back tens of thousands of elementary students to the classroom. 6th, 7th, and 8th graders are expected to return next week. You've been arguing for months that school, you know, done properly, is safe.
It is, and these kids need to get back in school. So the priority needs to continue to be doing whatever we can and reimagining whatever we can in order to get as many kids back as much time as they can in the remaining months of the school year, this academic year. And then the absolute focus needs to be on whatever we can do to be full-time in person as normal of a day as possible in the fall of 2021. So using the mitigation strategies, social distancing, hand washing and mask wearing is going to be key. And I think as time rolls on and we get more and more data that continues to show that schools are not major super spreader sites, we can hopefully reimagine some of these quarantine restrictions. Because my biggest concern right now is as we get more bodies in the building, even though I believe the risk is very low when everybody is masked, we still have that possibility of sidelining individuals for 10 to 14 days with potential exposures that are actually relatively low risk. We just don't have the national and statewide guidelines saying that we can relax those quarantine strategies. So I'm looking for that as time moves forward here as going to be what keeps someone in school. Otherwise, we have individuals that are deciding between full virtual and full in-person when certain hybrid models go away because they're afraid being in person is going to knock them out for 14 days if they have a lower risk, but technically, you know, exposure and being sidelined for 14 days from not only school, but sports and other things that are very important to these kids. It's a difficult choice, and we need to continue to have conversations about this so we can make this better for our children.
Let's hear now from Alan in Midway. Hi, Alan. What's your question for the doctor?
Hi. I just have a question about play dates. You know, you just said that schools are safe. And would it be okay, like, we want to hang out with a couple fully vaccinated as well, and they wear masks, we don't go to restaurants, but they have kids that are a kid that's 2 and 4, like our kids, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. Is that safe? Is it not safe? Should we still hold off?
So I think for the most part, it depends on what the kids are doing. If this is a family that has been hunkered down in their own house and they're not eating at restaurants, they're not traveling, the kids are not going to daycare and having higher risk exposures, and the adults are vaccinated, that's going to be a much lower risk scenario. I would encourage, if that exact question comes up frequently over the next few weeks, it's getting warmer outside. Let's get these kids outside. Let's run around and play. You know, being outside and able to socially distance and being in that greater volume of air is going to dispel any possible carriage of the coronavirus that's, you know, being coughed or sneezed out, and hopefully will be a much less risk scenario. So cautiously in a group that has been very much adhering to all the guidelines, it's probably safe, but the most safe is still going to be getting outdoors with these kids.
One more question on schools, Doctor. The New York Times found that more than 120,000 cases have been linked to colleges and universities since the beginning of this year. More than 500,000 cases have been reported since the beginning of the pandemic. So how are our state colleges and universities managing this?
You know, we're doing pretty good. I am a fan of the end of this pandemic coming in the face of more testing and more vaccine. And some of the strategies used by area colleges and some of the area public schools to do saliva-based testing or random screening of students, you know, on a weekly manner is identifying not a lot of students, but the ones it does identify, they're able to confirm, isolate, and you know, mitigate those individuals before we have a spread of the virus. And as we have these, you know, variants coming up in our communities, you know, a close congregate living setting like college dormitories, things can spread very, very quickly. I think for the most part, yes, has there been a lot of cases in colleges? There have, but fortunately, the severity of disease has been generally mild. Certainly we hear about some very unfortunate cases. And I also think it's a bit of a miss that we didn't prioritize college kids in congregate living as being high priority for vaccine as well in one of these early tiers. My hope is that they will all be able to get vaccinated this summer, and we will be in a much better place in colleges across the board again by fall of 2021.
Let's hear now from Gus in Evanston. Hi, Gus. What's your question?
Hi. I'm calling because I've been back. I've had COVID, and I also know I've had the antibodies. But do I need a vaccine? I know I'm like 272 millions in line. I'm really low priority. But I have all sorts of friends and family jumping at chances to get this vaccine. I don't feel like I need it. I like, do we know the efficacy and necessary means for us people who've had the virus to have it again, to need that vaccine?
So, yes, Gus, present guidance is for everybody to get vaccinated, including those who have had coronavirus before. If you had COVID and you have antibodies, in all probability you do have antibodies and you have yours documented, which is even more beneficial, you can wait up to 90 days from the time of your original coronavirus, and that's a reliable period of immunity before being at risk for re-exposure, truthfully. Now, yes, those antibodies may last a little bit longer than that, but you know, if it's been more than 90 days, we have to consider you as being potentially susceptible. The antibodies generated by the vaccines are sometimes up to 10 times more than what's generated from the actual viral illness itself. So it is very important. Presently in our country, you still will have a standard vaccine course, meaning two doses of the messenger RNA vaccines or a single dose of Johnson & Johnson. That guideline may change. You may only need a single booster. It's being researched in other countries. It's being tried in other countries. But currently, two doses are recommended. You can wait till closer to the end of your 90-day immunity window after being infected. But please get your vaccine when it's your turn.
That's Dr. Mia Taramina, infectious disease specialist from the DuPage Medical Group. Dr. Taramina, we are so grateful to you for this really important public service. Enjoy your weekend.
Pleasure's mine. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We've got more for you on the podcast, WBEZ's Reset, wherever you listen.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.